Case of Appeal 024041, Susan Hallman versus Louis A. Morning.
May it please the court, counsel, I'm Wayne Harvey. I represent Ms. Hallman, the plaintiff in this case. This case presents a very narrow issue, Your Honor, and that simply is when the cause of action pursuant to 42 U.S.C. 1983 accrues. The facts of this case are likewise fairly simple. This arises out of the Democratic primary for circuit clerk in Alexander County, Illinois, held on March 21, 2000. In that primary, the question raised was whether there was ballot box stuffing in such a way as to violate Ms. Hallman's right to a free and fair election.
Now, I take it that you don't dispute the fact that the seizure of ballots prior to the election was sufficient to put Ms. Hallman on notice that wrongdoing was afoot.
I would agree, Your Honor, that the seizure of the ballots by search warrant prior to the election may have notified Ms. Hallman that some attempt was being made to violate her rights to the election. But the question, and that's only where the inquiry begins, but not where it ends. The question upon which this court's previous decision in Kelly, it seems to me, would make this turn is when does the injury arise? My suggestion to the court is the injury that we're complaining of here is that Ms. Hallman was deprived of her office by fraudulent election practices. She could not have been deprived of her office, and the injury could not have occurred until such times as those ballots were counted. I would also suggest to Your Honor that it may well be, from Ms. Heilman's point of view, that the seizure of the ballots by the state police may have been viewed as having a prophylactic effect, that is, whatever attempts may have been made to fraudulently influence the election may have been alleviated, and it was only the return of those ballots and ultimately the casting of those ballots and the counting and certification processes under state law which deprived her of her right.
Well, it may be that the wrong can be remedied by removing the fraudulent votes from the pool, but hasn't the harm already occurred?
From Ms. Heilman's point of view, I would suggest no, Your Honor, it has not. There may have been a harm. There may have been criminal conduct. There may have been other inappropriate things. But the harm does not accrue, and the constitutional injury here cannot accrue to Ms. Hallman until that wrong acts to deprive her of a constitutional right. In this case, the right to have her right to continue in office determined in a free and fair election, free of a ballot box stuffing incident such as this. That cannot occur until the ballot box is actually stuffed and the illegal fraudulent ballots actually influence the outcome in such a way as to deprive her of her office. I think it's analogous to this court's decision in Kelly versus the City of Chicago. And I think the Kelly case is an appropriate departure in this because I think everyone involved in this case, plaintiffs, defendants, and the district court, rely on this court's Kelly decision and the analysis there. And the Kelly analysis is very simple. There's two things. The first thing you do is you identify the injury. The injury to Ms. Hallman in this case is that she was deprived of her office by fraudulent ballot box stuffing. Secondly, when could she have known of that injury? That injury could not have taken place unless and until the illegal ballots acted in such a way as to deprive her of her office.
So your position basically is if on March 18th, Jimmy Carter had come into Alexander County to supervise every last detail of the March 20th election, these ballots couldn't have played any negative role in the election.
Your Honor, until those ballots are counted and certified, regardless of what the circumstances are, Mrs. Hallman could not have suffered constitutional injury in this case sufficient to give rise to this action. because without the ballots being counted, if one hypothesizes...
So she doesn't have any abstract right to prevent the county clerk from tampering with ballots if the tampered ballots never enter the electoral process?
My suggestion, Your Honor, is precisely that. In this case, the right that she has that was violated is to have an election free of ballot box stuffing. That's a right that's been recognized in a number of cases in the United States Supreme Court. It may be a tautology to say it, but I suggest nevertheless that it's true in this case, that the ballot box, the right not to have the ballot box stuffed, cannot in fact accrue until the ballot box is stuffed. And Mr. Mays and the others could have done whatever they wanted to do before the election, but if those ballots are never counted and they never act to deprive her of her right to a free and fair election, this action doesn't accrue. And my suggestion to Your Honor is that that is precisely analogous to what this court held in Kelly and to what the cases that this court relied upon in Kelly said. In Kelly, the right was the deprivation of a property right absent due process by the revocation of the liquor license. That right did not accrue, according to this court's decision, to the plaintiff in that case until the decision was made to revoke the license. Now, there may or may not have been inappropriate conduct by others prior to that decision, which may or may not have given rise to other torts. And in Kelly, there was also a companion state case for malicious prosecution. But the right protected under the Constitution, the deprivation of the liquor license, did not take place until the decision was actually made to revoke the liquor license.
Let's compare it to bribery for a moment. Why isn't this, like bribery? In other words, a bribe isn't harmless simply because the recipient later gives the bribe back. The harm is done when the bribe is offered.
I think that may well be true, Your Honor, and I wouldn't dispute that, but that doesn't give rise to this particular constitutional injury unless and until the bribe deprives Ms. Heilman of her constitutional right. It may give rise to any number of other types of actions in this case. In fact, there were criminal actions that were brought against Mr. Mays. That may well be true, but those actions do not deprive Ms. Heilman of the constitutional right that we complain of here until the votes get counted. My suggestion to you is if the state police had never brought those ballots back, if those ballots had never been commingled with the unquestionably legitimate ballots, there would never have been this right of action, because if she had lost her office, it would have unquestionably been by legitimate ballots. And that's what we complain of, and that's why we believe the district court got the Kelly analysis wrong. And we ask that the district
court... Would you repeat that? If she had lost her office by legitimate ballots?
Yes, ma'am. If the illegal absentee ballots had not been returned by the state police, and the votes had been counted, whatever the outcome of that election was would unquestionably have been legitimate. And so there would have been no violation of her constitutional right, regardless of the outcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Hara.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. I concur that this is a narrow issue. I think this is a case that's marked by a lot of concurrence because there seems to be no dispute as to the facts, and there's very little dispute as to the law. Clearly, the two-year statute of limitations applies. It's also clear from the case law that the federal court is to determine when the cause of action accrues.
Well, let's take a look for just a second at Mr. Harvey's question. In what sense would the election had been unfair if the fraudulent ballots had not been returned to the pool and counted along with all of the legitimate ballots?
I think what we have to do is look at the causes of action.
If you wouldn't mind, I have Judge Rovner's question too, and so I would love just a straight answer to that before we broaden perspective. Why is an unfair election if the ballots are not there?
And what I'm indicating is that the cause of action here is a free and fair election. So the injury occurs when that election process is interfered with. It deprives the complainant of the fair and free election.
Totally abstract. So even if everything is fixed before the election happens, and the election happens on the basis of absolutely clean ballots, both absentee and cast at the polls, you think there's a cause of action for the abstract?
It would make it a peculiarity that the cause of action of a complaint in these instances would depend upon the fortuitousness of the intercession of the Illinois State Police in remedying this situation.
No, it just means that any way you look at it, the cause of action wouldn't arise until the election process was tainted,
voting rights causes of action in particular can have presumed damages. There's a presumption of damage when there's a taint of the election process.
I understand it. I'm just, there are two ways you can look at this case. One is an abstract process way where if somebody lies or if they tamper with an absentee ballot, even if that absentee ballot is thrown away before it ever enters the election process, that's enough. Maybe that's a claim she could raise, but remember, this is a very early stage of the process in this case. Another claim a candidate could raise is the actual set of ballots that were taken into account were tainted by some impropriety here, tampering with the absentee ballots. And I'm not sure why this person's claim has to be characterized, can only be characterized the way you say, instead of her not having, she's too late for the process claim that you're talking about, but she may not be too late for the election day claim.
Well, again, following the court's ruling in Kellett that indicated that it is when the injury occurred.
I'm suggesting she has no injury for the election day claim until the ballots are there. So in my example, if Jimmy Carter had come in and had carefully reviewed every absentee ballot as a neutral third-party observer before the election day and returned only those that were untainted, and they were then counted, the process of the ballot counting is not tainted at all at that point, and she has no injury.
But under that reasoing, then, that you could have an election fraud or election rigging situation whereby the ballots were counted, and let's say the riggers goofed up and didn't supply enough illegitimate ballots, that would mean that the person that won the election doesn't have a cause of action for that either because they won the election.
Maybe they wouldn't. Why would they have a claim if they won the election?
Because there was an actual injury to the election process. There was a deprivation of a constitutional right to a free and fair election.
And on this Kelly, which you rely on, in terms of where the clock started in Kelly, didn't the statute of limitations clock start from the date of revocation,
yes,
not the date on which the police officers engaged in the illegal activity?
That's what I purpose with regard to, we have to look at the different causes of action here. The cause of action in Kelly is quite different than the one here. The tavern in Kelly didn't have a constitutional right to be free of malicious remarks by police officers. Here we have a person that's entitled constitutionally to a free and fair election. So the injury in Kelly occurred when there was a deprivation of the property right, but not when there was a malicious statement made about the activity in the tavern. But it's a quite different process here because of the nature of the cause of action, and I think Judge Herndon recognized that. It was a situation where it was conceded by everyone in this Highland room that there was mischief afoot, allegedly, with regard to this election process, at least by March 16th.
But, you know, there's a lot of cases under which if the state procedures have already cured the problem, you don't have a federal claim that you can bring. If you had a taking, and the state said, oops, you know, we're sorry, we shouldn't have taken that, here's your money with full interest, here's everything, you couldn't come into federal court and then complain again about the taking, because the state has fixed the problem. And I'm not sure I've heard a satisfactory answer to the question why Ms. Harleman wouldn't have thought at the moment the state police seized the questionable ballots that although there had been a problem, the system was working the way it should have been. It was all right.
Well, again, I think that would leave it to the fortuitousness of the situation. It seems to me that, as the court pointed out in its order, Ms. Harleman could have brought an action before the election.
But why won't she? What else could she ask for other than having the state police seize the ballots and have them not participate? They've already done everything she might want.
Well, and I can only emphasize again that it's the allegation with respect to the conduct of the defendants as to the tainting of the election process. The deprivation of the right here is with regard to the free and fair election process.
If she had won, would she be here today?
I think she could well have been here because, again, it's the deprivation of the right of the free election. I think that constitutional deprivation, particularly of the election process, doesn't depend upon winning or losing. It depends upon the process.
Where's her injury in fact,
right,
if she had won?
It's a question of the process.
I understand you're making a process point, but where is her injury in fact if she had won the election?
It is to her constitutional right to that fair election process.
Maybe the community might have been here, but do you think she would have been here?
That's the difference, yes, between a candidate suit and a voter suit.
I don't see the distinction between a candidate and a voter under these circumstances because they're both entitled to the same thing, and that is to the free and fair election. The injury occurs when the conduct to taint the election occurs, not when we find out what the results or the effects are. And I think Judge Herndon found that in his order quite properly along the lines of Kevin. Thank you.
Thank you. One minute, 20 seconds.
Your Honor, I think the dichotomy here between injury and damage is fundamentally misstated by counsel. Injury occurs when the constitutional right is affected. In the Kelly case, injury occurred with the revocation. The damage didn't begin until they actually closed down the tavern. Analogously, in this case, Ms. Heilman's damage doesn't begin until her term expires in December. That's when she has to leave office. But the decision, the improperly influenced decision, the constitutional injury is inflicted on Election Day. It could not have been inflicted before Election Day. That's why the cause of action cannot accrue until Election Day. And that's why we believe Judge Herndon was mistaken, and that's why we ask you to reverse.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Harvey, Mr. O'Hara. The case will be taken under advisement. Thank you both.